This is Echo Zoe Radio, episode 103 for November 2016 with Alan Hodak on Christian education.
Welcome to Echo Zoe Radio, the podcast outreach of Echo Zoe Ministries, where you'll hear about important topics affecting the church today. Our primary goal is to explore a variety of issues while remaining faithful to God and His Word. Stay with us for the next hour as your host, Andy Olson, shares his conversation with this month's guest. Here's your host, Andy Olson.
I'm Andy Olson. Thanks for listening to Echo Zoe Radio. This is episode 103 for November 2016. My guest for this episode is Alan Hodak, school administrator at Fourth Baptist Christian School in Plymouth, Minnesota, and executive director of the Minnesota Association of Christian Schools. Alan's with me in studio this month to talk about many different issues and concerns regarding Christian education. Check out the web post for this episode for relevant show notes, and you can find those at echozoe.com/103. With that said, here's my discussion with Alan Hodak. Alan, thanks for coming in tonight and being on Echo Zoe Radio.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
We're going to talk about a Christian education.
All right.
Let's start just by introducing you and your ministry and a little bit how we know each other.
Okay, well, my name is Alan Hodak, and I am the principal or administrator of Fourth Baptist Christian School, which is in Plymouth, Minnesota. And I also serve a dual role as the executive director of the Minnesota Association of Christian Schools. We have 19 member schools here all over the state of Minnesota. And they range from all different sizes. Some are very small. Some are working primarily with homeschool students. And then some are much bigger, like our school, where we have a K through 12 program.
How long have you been administrator at Fourth Baptist?
Well, this is my seventh year at Fourth Baptist. I have been involved in Christian education now for 30 years. And I started out in Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh.
It's kind of funny that I'm all the way out here, but through circumstances that happened, the Lord brought us out here. But I started out just teaching. I taught social studies in the secondary high school and English, and coached basketball and baseball and whatever else was needed. And then through the course of the years, I kind of delved into administration primarily because I saw how poorly many of our Christian schools were being run, and I knew that I had the experience where I could help manage the ministry a little bit better. So I got involved in administration. I do a lot of teaching still, a lot of coaching, but it's over the years changed, of course, and so I'm here in Minnesota now at Fourth Baptist.
Great. So your experience then as a social studies teacher, is that kind of what helped get your knowledge on the subject we're going to talk about?
Well, I don't know about that so much. I think my original knowledge came more from government, experience in government. And I have a business background initially. But I got very involved in police work. My original degree is a pre-law degree in criminal justice.
Okay.
And I received that degree from Arizona State University in 1983. And then I went back to school because I realized, hey, I want to coach. I want to work with kids. And so a lot of the credits I had with that degree allowed me to go ahead and get a social studies teaching certificate through the state of Arizona.
Well, I guess it certainly at least fueled the interest, though, at least.
Definitely. I love the law. I love studying the law. It's fascinating to me. I've often thought of studying to become an attorney, but it's
probably better you didn't.
It's probably better I didn't at this stage of the game. But I actually have thought about going back to school and either working on a second master's or perhaps even a doctorate that would maybe delve more into the educational law side.
When I first approached you, because my son Jude is now a student at Fourth Baptist.
Yes.
And so you gave us a presentation as we were considering our options with him. You've got a great presentation you give to families on And part of it is on Christian, like the history of education here in America, sure. Not just private Christian schools, but education in general.
Yeah, and kind of where we're going. The reason I did that, if we can back up for a minute, it's kind of interesting. Yeah. The reason that I did that is for the past 27 or so years, as I have interviewed families, I would sit across the table with families like yours, and I found out that the commitment level and the reasons why they were coming were really not good reasons. They were coming to the school because of perhaps more of a protection or perhaps because they thought maybe we could help their child educationally. But what they were actually missing was the philosophy of Christian education. And so I decided a few years back, actually when I came to Forth, that I really wanted to try something different. I felt like if we have any future at all, we have to start teaching people why we do what we do. Why are we actually involved in a Christian school, Christian education? What is that? And what are people actually investing in? So I decided to put together a little PowerPoint, which you and your wife partook of and listened mm-hmm. to. And it basically broke down. There's a lot to it, but it broke down primarily what the five major reasons were that I personally would put my child in a Christian school. Uh-huh. And part of that, of course, number one reason is that American history supports Christian education. So that's kind of where you had that initial introduction.
Yeah.
But, you know, it stems because there's so much involved in the history and kind of where we are today and where education is going. It's really rather frightening. And so what my goal is right now is to try to get our folks really sold on the philosophy of what we're doing, get them behind it, get them believing it and understanding it, and then wanting to invest in it. Because, you know, the truth is that there are going to be times in our school, as hard as we try to have a good school, that we're going to mess up, or mm-hmm. something is going to go wrong, or there's going to be an issue between students, or discipline, or you name it. And it's at those times that the parents' resolve has to be there and conviction has to be there, or it's easy just to pick up and go somewhere else. Because, yeah. I mean, just in Plymouth alone, I think we have now 11 private schools to choose from. And, of course,
wow.
they're not all Christian. And, in fact, we're the only Christian school. But, nevertheless, people will shop around and they'll look around and they'll say, you know what, this school doesn't meet my needs anymore. I'm going over here. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure in our greater area, even in Maple Grove, I know there are several Christian schools. So they're not far away. They're half hour, 45 minutes, an hour from each other. And there's a lot of competition, but I think what people have to really be sold on is what is Forth Baptist doing, and I'm going to support them and invest in them and continue to stay with them year after year through the good times and perhaps through the more challenging issues yeah. that come up.
Well, you're dealing with people who, right from the get-go, you know, have decided we're not going with, like, the easy option.
Right.
Because the easy thing to do is just whatever the local school district has for your kid, you just enroll them and, you know, you walk them to the bus stop in the morning and you stand there and wait for them in the afternoon. And
that's true.
You're dealing mostly with people like us who came from homeschooling background and people who have decided I want something better for my kids. I want them grounded in God's word. That's very important. And it's really kind of two sides of the same coin. Is I want them grounded in God's word for one, and on the other hand, I want them not soaking in the world and the I guess to put it nicely, the secular mindset
sure.
that's so prevalent today.
Well, and you hit the nail on the head with that last statement, I think, because it really comes down to, and I share this, you'll remember in my presentation, is if we take everything else away and we boil it down to why do we exist because we're trying to teach our kids how to think like God thinks.
Mm-hmm.
I want my children, and I have five, I want my children to think from a biblical perspective, because the minute they walk out our house, you know, they go to college, whether they're going to a Christian college or whether they're going to a secular, there are honestly few institutions left when we really narrow it down that we can actually trust to send our kids to, because anymore the philosophy or even the theology that is taught in many of our Christian colleges is so confused. and mm-hmm. and they won't take a strong position, even on salvation at times. And so you're struggling, where do I send my child? You know, if I want to continue to give them that biblical philosophy of education, where am I going to send them? And I mean, it's a struggle. And so if we don't ground them as a school and as parents and our church, because as you know, that's the three main legs, I believe, that supports, that give our kids a chance at real success when they leave. If those things aren't in place, and if we're not doing our job, then that's why we're losing our kids when they get to be in their late teens, early 20s.
Well, if you don't mind, let's talk for a moment about the theology and that is behind mm-hmm. the school. Because you're at Fourth Baptist, which is, I'm going to come back to this later. I don't think it's important now, like, why Fourth? But okay. At some point, I want to bring back, I don't think it's an important part of this discussion right now, but the Fourth Baptist is a conservative, mm-hmm. Calvinistic.
To some degree.
Mm-hmm. I meant to say Reformed. Is there a bit more Reformed church?
Okay.
We don't attend church there, but we have very close theologically.
Yes.
Which is one of the things that drew us is, you know, we want, it's not just enough to put our kids in a school that says they're Christian, private Christian. We want somebody who's, you know, similar theologically, because there are lots of Christian schools out there. I mean, yep. we recently moved and we were closer to a school that was run by a Lutheran church when we lived there. And then we're not that far from another one that's run by an Episcopal church.
Sure.
So, and there's Catholic private schools everywhere. So, but the theology is in some cases radically different.
True.
And how much do you battle with? I mean, a lot of your students are like us. The families don't attend Fourth Baptist.
Yes, that's correct.
In fact, is it fair to say the majority don't?
I would say so. We only have about a third of our kids that actually come from Fourth Baptist Church, and then the rest of the community. I mean, we probably have 50 to 60 churches represented in our student body.
Now, you have rules set up that mm-hmm. At least one parent has to be a professed believer.
Yes.
That you have a certain amount of time once your kid is enrolled where you have to be a member of a church and attending regularly.
Right.
So we want people grounded. You want the families grounded as well.
And that's, you know, that's one of the legs, that's one of the supports that I mm-hmm. sell in my admissions presentation, is that, you know, it's the home, the church, and the family.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sorry, the home, the church, and the school.
Yeah.
The family is the home, not our support. You are the family.
Right.
We're supporting you.
Yeah.
But, you know, we want our families under the ministry of the Word of God.
Right.
And without that, you know, the support, the training of the parents, which I kind of look at it that way. I look at the fact that the home is God's ordained institution for education for our kids.
Yeah.
In fact, I believe dads really are the ones that will stand before the Lord one day and give an account. What do our kids believe?
Thought.
Yeah, it is a scary. It's a big responsibility.
Yeah.
But we're not teaching our dads that anymore.
Right.
Why aren't we teaching our dads that? Well, that has to come from the church. And unfortunately, a lot of the churches aren't teaching that either.
Right.
And so,
well, how much, I guess what I was getting at with the leading down the path of families that aren't necessarily members at Fourth Baptist, how much sure. is that a challenge for you as a school to make sure that the parents understand that they're not getting it at, you know, are they getting it at their home churches or?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I am sure that there are families that are not. Mm-hmm. You know, we're there to try to minister to those families as well. You know, we ask the families when they come in, are they attending church? Where are they attending church? We ask them for a testimony of salvation. They write it out for us.
Yeah.
You know, but beyond that, to be quite honest, I don't have the time to really delve right. into that. I mean, I ask the questions.
But you know, yeah. issues come up. And
oh, sure.
You end up having to work with yep. parents over different issues and stuff.
But I don't, what I don't find a lot of people arguing over is what we believe or what we teach, you know, as far as our Bible class
sure.
theology. We don't get people questioning that, although at times we will. Uh-huh. They may come to me and say, hey, a teacher taught this, or they'll go to the teacher. Usually I'll direct them back to the teacher, and then we'll have a discussion as a result. but seldom is there an argument over what we are teaching. We're very careful.
Right.
And we're not there to necessarily drive a doctrinal point home where there might be a doctrinal difference between our churches.
Uh-huh.
That's not necessarily why we're there. But we are there, and we don't apologize for our positions as a church.
Either, nor should you.
You know, because we are Fourth Baptist Church. You know,
right.
It's one and the same.
Yeah.
So, you know, what we are teaching, you know, we try to put that all up front so that when a family checks us out like you guys did, they know exactly where we stand. And then in the admissions interview, too, they can ask all the questions they want regarding sure. doctrinal issues that may be important to them.
Yeah. I don't want to press you too much. I was just curious.
No,
as
no,
to, like, you know, because churches are so diverse, I think, these days, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that we're losing so much ground these days in the American church.
Yes.
Where we've got so much going down the path of liberalism mm-hmm. and seeker sensitive and not teaching the core doctrines of the faith.
Yep.
I mean, the very basic. I just heard a statistic recently that 70% of professed evangelicals believe that human beings are inherently good. People mm-hmm. are inherently good. Well, that's counter to the entire sure. message of Scripture.
Absolutely. Starting with Genesis 3. Yeah, you know, and I think one of the things we do drive home, and I would rather be labeled, if I was going to be labeled something at a school, or I think even our church, I would rather be labeled as a church that really tries to delve into and study the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And I want our kids to be prepared biblically so that when they leave our school, they can defend their faith. I mean, that's something we've changed a lot of the high school curriculum in Bible reflect those very things. In fact, mm-hmm. we just made an agreement recently with Faith Baptist Bible College to teach some of their Bible courses on site. And the reason we chose Faith is because they're pretty close to us doctrinally. In fact, they're very close to us doctrinally. And what we wanted to do is offer an honors program so that kids could get better grounded in God's Word.
Mm-hmm.
So we're starting out. We have to hire a master's level teacher. We actually have a PhD teaching our Bible for this particular program. Faith approves the hire. They actually hire the teacher and pay them.
Oh, wow.
We pay them to pay our teacher. It's kind of funny. Yeah. But he's teaching Old Testament Survey 1, and then he'll be teaching Old Testament Survey 2 in the second semester. And then we'll kind of see how that goes, because my plan, I hope, is that we can teach some Gen Ed from Faith as well. And then kids, when they get out, they're going to have 27, 30 plus dual credit hours, but college credits. And then if they want to transfer into a school like Faith, which is pretty similar to us, it's a natural transition.
Sure.
And so we're trying to come up with some new programs, new ideas to do this, but we're very concerned that our kids get grounded well.
Uh-huh.
And then in the opposite class, which our juniors and seniors are taking right now with our youth pastor, is a class called Understanding the Times out of Summit Ministries. And
yep.
it's trying to give the kids a Bible hermeneutic to defend their faith. And that's a very, very popular class. But it is a class that I think is necessary, because it's teaching, you know, about all kinds of different world religions. And
yeah.
what is the Bible position?
Well, Summit, if I understand correctly, is their whole purpose is to prepare high schoolers for college. And, you know, doing summer camps to prepare them for going and transitioning from Christian homes into more secular universities, and being ready for that a challenge that they're going to face to their faith, and being able to answer when they're called out in front of the class and mocked and whatnot, and how to be able to stand there firm in their faith and realize that and know that the Bible's true.
Yes.
And they don't have anything to fear.
Yep, stand for what is true and you'll be okay. God's going to help you through. So yeah, definitely.
So you brought some interesting books with today.
Yeah, a few interesting things.
Yeah, and one of the things that really caught my attention through the presentation that we did, and then kind of got me to put your name on my list for people that I'd like to interview sometime, was this idea of the history of education mm-hmm. in America. Yeah. And that's why I think the books are really interesting. You brought actual school books
yep.
from mid-19th century.
These are the McGuffey readers and original McGuffey readers, and I'm sure many, many folks who are homeschooling or, you know, have studied education at all have seen these multiple times. But these are all levels. And as I was just glancing through this, trying to refresh my memory on it, these books were used for 125 years in the early 1800s for American education.
In the public school.
In the public school.
Now, we were just looking through the table of contents. Can you read off a couple of the chapters in, say, the book you got in your
hand? Well, this is, this book is an eclectic second reader, so it would be younger classes in schools. It's kind of interesting.
Okay.
There's a number of stories, and these stories would have been very carefully selected. They would have been wholesome stories. They would have been carefully, they wouldn't have just picked anything like they're doing today.
Right. But
there's a couple of chapters, the story about King Solomon, and then more about King Solomon. There's stories about, birds and soldiers and about the globe, and then there's a chapter on the Lord's Prayer. And then there's a chapter, Mother, What is Death? A story about George Washington and Joseph, more about Joseph. And then they have historical stories about Columbus and the original settlement. And there's one about the Ten Commandments, about using profane language. I like that. But, the idea of these stories was that it gave kids a good, solid moral foundation because it was based upon absolute truth and the foundation of the Word of God. Mm-hmm. And what I have found in my studies and over the years as I've spoken on myriads of topics is that I believe, and people may disagree with me on this, but I believe that everything that we did in our early history was based upon four truths that we find in Genesis chapters 1 through 11. And I call them, and they've been written about as the four divine institutions. And they were the institutions of volition, whether or not we have a right to accept or reject God. These are God-given rights.
Uh-huh.
The marriage was one, between one man and one woman, mm-hmm. for life. The family, which came from the marriage, of course, children. And then nationalism, which we would find in Genesis 10 and Genesis 11, where God intended for nations to be strong so that the gospel could continue, because if there was one world government, like in Genesis 11, then it would be easy for Satan to thwart the gospel. And so God created nations. Why did he do that? Well, because he wanted to preserve the opportunity for people to hear the gospel as many places as he could. And so I believe that early, if we look at everything in our history, the founders, you go back and you study the founders and what they wrote and what they believed, I think we could kind of safely say that everybody kind of bought those four things. They believed those four things were critical, that we hold those things dear and true in our history. When you look today, what's being attacked? Well, all four of them are being attacked. I mean, religious liberty today, they don't want us to practice our faith. The government doesn't want us to share the gospel in the workplace. We can't have the Ten Commandments up. We can't have a Bible at our desk. I know we can, but you know what I mean? Everything right. is a battle. And marriage, my goodness, look at what's happened to marriage and the family. The family is being just absolutely attacked. And then, of course, the movement of internationalism in our world and the strength of the United Nations. I mean, you study what really goes on in the United Nations and it's frightening. They have their own court system. They have their own prison system. I mean, they have all of this stuff in place. And, all of these things, these four things, are just being so attacked. And that's Satan's way. He takes the truth and he turns it upside down. And the attack is so great today. I mean, this election coming up, what is happening in our school system? You got to ask yourself the question, how long do we really have? And how close to the end are we really?
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know the answer to that. I kind of think things have to get a lot worse.
That's an interesting question. We're both premillennial, so
yeah.
We're going to be together on that.
Yeah, but it's fascinating, to me. I mean, where are we going in America, and how bad will it really get
in
this era? So very interesting stuff.
Yeah, and that's, I don't want to get into, I do want to get into politics, but not like presidential election politics.
Sure.
I think you've got some interesting stories and also, I'm interested to hear, what what's going to happen going forward. Mm-hmm. You know, we do have a lot of challenges. So,
certainly.
But this is fascinating. I mean, the scriptures woven throughout the curriculum there in these books that you brought.
Well, yeah, and I wrote an article a few years ago about kind of the beginning, if you will, of the classical university, the Christian university, and what did it actually look like in early America? And, you know, I'm no expert on any of this, but I did study Jonathan Edwards. We were talking about him a little bit before
we came on. I started, Stephen Lawson taught a five-part series at Grace Community Church just recently, and they've put it online. And I'll link to that. It's fascinating. I've listened to the first three. There's an introduction, and then there's two on Jonathan Edwards that I just finished, and then I'm about to listen to the last two, which are on George Whitfield. Mm. And it's absolutely fascinating, and I think I know where you're going, because he talks about all of the major Ivy League universities starting out as seminaries.
Yes, Bible training, Bible teaching institutions. I mean, you know, you look at Edwards and...
Who was the president of Princeton?
Well, Edwards entered Yale College and graduated from their School of Divinity, you know, at 13.
Well, which is interesting because he wasn't even saved until he was 17?
I can't remember.
But 17 or 18?
Yeah, but it's fascinating. I mean, these places started out so different.
Yeah.
You know, I went to the internet and I didn't find out about much about the history of Yale, Harvard, and Princeton. It's hard to find out about their history, and I wonder if that's not...
Well, Harvard was the first,
mm-hmm.
and it was started as a training ground for pastors to go out and preach the gospel within the colonies.
Yep.
But it was also the first to turn liberal. I mean, by Jonathan Edwards' time in the 1730s and 40s, Harvard was already... very liberal.
Yes. Yeah. And I think Princeton would be the same. Mm-hmm. You know, these were training institutions. In fact, when we look at other, I graduated from Arizona State University. It started out as a teacher's college, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm sure early on in all of these institutions' history, the Bible was not denied. You know, there may have been plenty of other teachings, which I'm sure entered in. But the Bible was not denied. And again, I really, if we go back and I think if we examine what went on in those institutions, most people bought and believed in the four divine institutions of Genesis. Mm-hmm. It's really been since the 60s, since we saw an attack you know, in the Supreme Court in 1963, 1964. I wish I'd brought that information. But, you know, where three Supreme Court cases basically you took Bible reading and prayer out of our public schools. I mean, you look at prior to that time, America was doing well, more a whole lot better spiritually than we are today. And we've just seen such a decline, a moral decline, since the 1960s to our present time at a very rapid rate.
Yeah, rapid, and even just the last 5 years has been
ridiculous.
Ridiculous, right. Well, let's take a short break. I'd like to take just a minute to promote some other ministries, and we'll come back. I want to talk a little bit about the politics that I brought up earlier.
Okay, sounds good.
This is Echo Zoe Radio.
Did you know that you can hear this podcast on Voice in the Wilderness Radio? VWR was founded for the purpose of magnifying the preaching of those whose preaching magnifies God. We're a 24/7 streaming radio station that you can listen to online or free apps for your mobile devices. You'll hear constant preaching from men like John MacArthur, Phil Johnson, Paul Washer, Vody Bauckham, Steve Lawson, and more. And you'll also hear podcasts like this one. VWR only plays material that conforms with our strict standard of sound exposition, discernment, and solid adherence to doctrines like the inerrancy and sufficiency of Scripture. The real heart of VWR, however, is to highlight the little guy, the pastors of small churches who are faithful expositors each week and enjoy bringing to you some of the best sermons you've never heard of from some of the best pastors you've never heard of to help equip you for ministry and edify your soul. And you, if you're listening, can submit your sermons to VWR as well. Listen online at wildernessradio.com or download the apps for your mobile devices. And thank you for supporting this quality podcast.
My name is Landon Chapman, and I want to tell you about the Fire Away Podcast. The Fire Away Podcast is the radio ministry of IntrudingFavor.com and the IntrudingFavor.com website. Each week, I discuss a variety of topics from a mostly Reformed viewpoint, ranging from current events to scriptural exposition. My goal is to be faithful to the Word of God, to glorify Him, and in the spirit of 2 Corinthians 3:18, be transformed into Christ's likeness. You may find the Fireway Podcast at IntrudingFavor.com, SermonAudio.com, subscribe on iTunes, or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher application.
Thanks, Alan. I'm really enjoying this discussion. Can't believe we're already a half hour into it. We talked a little bit about politics, and I know it's something you deal with. And I just got done talking before the break about how the last 5 years have been so radically changed. You know, you talk about since the 60s, but just even the last 5 years, things have just so changed. What do you expect, and how do you plan for the next 5 years, with all the stuff that's going on? When we got things like institutions being forced to open bathrooms up mm-hmm. to opposite sex people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's coming. What's going to happen? How do we defend against that?
Well, that's a great question, because I'm not sure of the answer right now. I mean, I will say to people, I'm sick and tired of playing defense all the time. And that's the way I feel. I feel like Christians are always backpedaling, and we're always playing defense against the onslaught of all these liberal policies that are just being, we're just bombarded by them. Yeah. And I look at what's happened in the state of Minnesota, because I know a lot of your listeners are not just in Minnesota, they're all over the country. And I look at how fast things have changed here, as you were alluding to. Mm-hmm. We fought as an organization the anti-bullying bill, which is maybe 3 years old now. Was written in the state of Minnesota in the public schools, and bullying is a serious issue in our public schools. I had no idea of the scope of it, but it's at an alarming proportion. Kids are bullied on buses, they're bullied in the school, and Minnesota created just a very complicated bill that created a new bureaucracy that would deal with bullying in our public schools.
Well, that seems to always be the answer, is just another bureaucracy.
But what they did was they tried to impose it on the privates, too. And the senator that is local here, Senator Limmer, you'll see his signs all over right now. He's trying to be reelected. And he, at the very 11th hour, I was at the committee meeting. I sat sitting in the committee meeting with one of my daughters, actually. She's interested in politics, too. And we went to the committee meeting to just kind of see where it was going to go, because I wasn't sure how is this going to affect, you know, Fourth Baptist and what we're trying to do in our Christian school organization. Because if we are mandated by law to report bullying incidents, come on, you know, how do you define that? And the law was so broad in its definition that if a kid calls another kid a name, basically they could be reported. The kid could report it to me, and then I had to go through, you know, certain kinds of
I mean, that's got to happen almost a daily basis.
Oh, I'm sure it happens constantly.
Even in a Christian school, I mean, you're going to be dealing with that almost.
Well, sure. But, you know, you deal with bullying issues. It spurred us on to writing a bullying policy, which I struggled with initially. But, I mean, the bullying policy basically is saying that if there's an issue of bullying and I find out about it, I'm going to deal with it as I would any other discipline issue. Yeah. I'm going to get the kids in. I'm going to find out what's going on. I'm going to call dads. You know, I'm going to deal with the issue.
Yeah.
I don't need to report it to, the bureaucratic organization that is created by the government monster. I don't need to do that. It's dad's job. It's mom's job.
Yeah.
You know, and if we're going to do what we're supposed to do as an extension of the Christian home, then we're going to include mom and dad in these important training opportunities, because this is discipleship.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, these are kids, and it ranges from age, but it doesn't matter if it's a high schooler making fun of another high schooler or if it's a little kid calling another kid a name,
yeah,
you know, I'm going to deal with it the same way. And we're going to get mom and dad involved, and I'm going to counsel from the Word of God, and we're going to put, you know, put that child in a little bit of an accountability structure from this point forward, uh-huh. and it better not happen again, or there's going to be greater discipline. I mean, this is what's missing in our public school setting, because we can't do anything anymore. You know?
Well, it's sad. I mean, you went right to dads, and it's sad that, I mean, why can't two dads just get together and say, look, our kids are not getting along. What can we do to keep them from beating each other up?
And, you know, it's funny. I've gone to more and more now when I'm dealing with issues. And one of the, this is totally apart from our conversation, but you'll understand, one of the biggest areas I'm struggling with in school discipline now is the electronics. You know, you've uh-huh. got texting, you've got all kinds of stuff going on, you know, whether it's on Facebook or other social media outlets, and you've got kids communicating to each other in very unhealthy and improper ways. And so I'll have parents call me, and they'll say, what are you going to do about it?
And what I just, can you do
I kind of laugh. I turn it back. Well, what should you do about this? And then we talk about the fact that, you know, you are the one that is providing the electronics. You are the one that owns the phone. You are the one that created and paid for and is paying for the plan. You know, and we talk about what can be done. And a lot of times I'm doing more now of what you just suggested, as I'm making parents communicate to parents, because they've got to get involved. They have to be big. They
right.
have to handle their kids' problems, and they have to parent.
Uh-huh.
I'm not the parent. God gave those kids to those parents. I've got my own problems. I don't need those problems, too, yeah. you know. So, I mean, it comes down to, I find myself doing more and more.
Well, I dread that myself. I've got a fourth grader. That the student that's going to your school is a fourth grader. And I dread that day. At what point is he going to come to me and say, Dad, you know, I need an iPod Touch, or I need an iPhone, or I need a, you know, what age is that normal for kids to all of a sudden start pressuring each other and that, you know, I got, or, you know, when are you going
to
get?
Well, I think it's coming faster than you would like it to, but you know, I mean, I've raised now four kids. We've four kids through the school, and three are through college, and one is in college right now. One, my youngest is an eighth grader, so I'm getting old. All right, but I've seen a lot, and I've dealt and worked with a lot of issues and a lot of parents, and you know what, I understand the draw of technology,
mm-hmm.
but I reject technology in the sense that I feel like we're giving our kids too many freedoms too early, and if we don't take a look at that, because the reality is, when you give your child a freedom, it is hard to take it back.
Right.
You know, if you give your child some, you know, access to whatever.
We deal with that. It's not the cell phone yet,
mm-hmm.
but we've got a pair of iPads for the kids. And that alone is a problem.
It's
I've dealt
challenge.
With, I've got three boys. My daughter is only 10 months, 11 months old. So she's not fighting with her yet. But you know, the three boys, I mean, it becomes an idol. I mean, these kids cannot move without having the iPad with them. Or
well, I tell the story, and hopefully none of the younger pastors on the pastoral staff at the church will listen to this, but I tell the story of where we're in a staff meeting.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, all the older guys, you know, they pretty much have already turned off their phones or silenced them. And, you know, they, either in their pockets, you might see them sitting on the table, but they're not constantly checking them. The younger guys, however, they can't keep their hands off of them. And I'm talking 10 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
And it's the reality of the younger generation. I mean, the truth is that they, and I, you know, I'm a little older, you know, I'm not the millennial anymore. I'm the generation, you know, above that, but it seems like the younger guys are so dependent and even to the point of where every time there's an email, you know, it clicks on their phone. They're never free of their device. And so they're constantly tempted to look at it and check it. And I don't know that that's healthy.
No.
You know, I look at that from a perspective of, you know, I'm late 50s. I look at that, and I look at how hard that must be. You know, I go home, honestly, my phone goes on my dresser. I don't have my email hooked in. I don't want to know all the emails that I get.
Yep.
It can wait.
Yeah. You
know? I mean, if people want to call me on the phone. I'll get back to them. You know, I always do. But I don't need that connection. It's not life or death for me.
Yeah.
I need, in fact, but I the truth is I need separation from it. I need to be able to go home.
And I think I'm like, I'm pushing 40, and I think I'm right in between both groups. I have my smartphone, and it has email, but I don't check it often on the phone.
Yep.
I'm out and about. Maybe I'm blessed that it takes so long to download emails on my phone. I don't want to wait for it.
Yeah.
But, and I don't get a ton of must-read emails anyway.
Sure.
But, yeah, I'm on Twitter. You know, while I was waiting for you tonight, I was reading my Twitter feed on my iPad, and I'm drawn to that a little more than I probably should. But,
yeah
but I can put it down, and I understand that observation being, because, like I said, I think I'm right in the middle.
And, you know, our kids are even more drawn to that.
Right, and that's what I'm afraid of. You know, I see that in my kids, and you know, with my oldest Jude, I think we've created an issue not just with the iPad, but just screens in general. Mm. I mean, we build up routines. Like, one routine we're fighting right now is that he's 9 years old, and for many years the routine was in the evening we would pick a TV show to watch together, find something that would be safe enough for kids to watch. And we'd sit down and watch something together. Well, now he's got that so ingrained in him that it is, it is a huge ordeal if he doesn't get a show. I want a show. We got to watch a show. Like, we don't have to watch a show. I mean, I know that's kind of a family tradition that we will watch a show together, but it's not important to life. You know, there are other things more important. We got to get our homework done, and we got to make sure that our rooms are clean, and you got to get ready for tomorrow. Let's make sure you got your lunch together. I mean, there are other things that are higher priority, and let's make sure we get those done first. And then if there's time left over, then we'll talk about a show.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, you think, you're talking about early education. I mean, you know, what did people do? Well, they wrote, you know, in journals, or they read. That was their entertainment. And how much more intelligent people were in those days and advanced academically than we are today.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, the kids, I want to say it was Edwards, but I don't remember exactly who it was, who had to write out, just to get into college, had to write a paper in Greek and in Latin.
Yes.
Just to get into college. I mean, and we don't even teach that anymore.
No.
And I lament the fact that logic isn't taught. I've gotten into studied some basic logic, like real basic logic. Taught some very basic logical fallacies and stuff. And that is just so important for people to understand. It saddens me that that's not taught at a sixth grade level or seventh grade level. You know, how to spot a fallacy, especially in an election season. I mean, right. You're watching ads. I mean, you can't watch a political ad without seeing a half a dozen logical fallacies in a 30-second
ad. Very true. Very true.
And, you know, in the time that these books were written, the average person would spot it right away.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the reasons they would spot it so quickly was because the foundation was so strong.
Right.
You know, they knew the truth. They knew the Word of God was absolute truth, and they had something by which to hang their hat on.
Right.
You know, to make, to reason out, it was what I'm hearing true or false. I have a buddy, a very, very good friend, who is much more liberal than I am. And we disagree on the origins, you know, of the world, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I believe in creation. I'm not sure what he believes in. but he bases everything upon whether or not science can prove it. And I base everything based on what God's word says.
Yep.
And does science support it?
Yeah.
There's a big difference there. And, you know, you look at people who are struggling with what is true, they're missing that foundation again. I am so convinced that everything goes back to the foundation. Everything goes back to whether or not I'm going to buy into Genesis 1 through 11. Am I going to believe in the biblical foundation that has been set forth, you know, for us. All we got to do is read it. And if we don't believe it by faith, then what are we hanging our hats on? We are so confused, and that's what's happened in our public schools. That's where it started, was with evolution and creation.
Yeah.
And how that in itself turned our educational system upside down. I tell the story, you know, in 1966, Fourth Baptist Christian School started. We're in our 51st year. Fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. Why did they start? Well, in, you know, we mentioned the court cases early, 1963, 1964, prayer and Bible is taken out of the public schools. But that's all. And I emphasis to be kind of sarcastic, but that's all it took for us to start the Christian school movement in 1966. I mean, you know, and it really gained ground in the 70s. But, you know, that's all it took, was just taking out Bible and prayer. I mean, I am shocked that so many Christians who are attending churches, you know, evangelical churches, Bible-preaching churches, supposedly, would just so quickly decide to do what we talked about earlier, drop our kids off at the bus, you know, let the bus take them to the public school because it's free, yeah, and not even think about what they're being taught on a day-to-day, 6 hours a day basis. That just, in my mind, I can't understand that, because, you know, we only got one crack at raising our kids, right?
Yeah.
You know, and that's all we're going to take with us, hopefully, if they trust Christ.
Well, I've always been terrified from the day Jude was born, my oldest, just terrified at what do I have to do to reinforce to this child's life a biblical worldview? Mm-hmm. As I look back at my own upbringing, I wasn't saved until I was 21, and I went to the government schools, and I'm looking at what I was taught through the 80s and 90s, and I think that was bad enough, looking back through the lens of now being saved and understanding some basic theology, looking, and it's only gotten worse. I mean, it's been, this year would have been my 20th high school reunion.
Mm. You're a young pup.
I didn't get the invitation. So not that I would have gone anyway, but 20 years I've been out. So a lot can happen in 20 years. And it's always been. Now, my other two who are school age are home with me, and Jude was up until last year too, are home, and we do a government school, but it's an online curriculum. So I see everything that comes through, and that was always very important to me, that if we're going to do this, I have to see every word on every page these kids read. Mm-hmm. I have to be able to say, no, we are not reading that book. We are, and we're not going to teach this lesson that way. Unfortunately, just about all of the students that are in that school are like-minded. They're either coming from Christian families like ours, or there are actually quite a few Muslim families too that want
interesting
a religious training,
moral training
for their kids too. So I don't see the problems on that school, but again, because I see every word and I hear every lesson that an online teacher will teach, and I'm there. And I can screen it all, and I can know immediately, okay, this is not something we agree with. And if something comes up, I can immediately say, this is what they're teaching, this is what we believe, and this is why we disagree, this is why we believe what we believe. Mm-hmm. We can give the kids that biblical worldview, even through the secular teaching that they're getting.
Sure.
That's always been very important to me. And I know that tuition is a big deal for most families. I mean, we're very blessed financially in our family. And even so, you know, tuition, writing out that check every month isn't easy.
Sure.
So I don't necessarily judge people who can't send their kid to a Christian school, or even that can't be home like I can be home and give them, you know, a free education the way I do it, you know, through a homeschool situation and whatnot. But I can't imagine where I would be if I didn't have either of those options.
Sure.
And
I think there's going to be a day coming, perhaps, when those options will even be less.
Yeah.
You know, I think that day's coming, and it scares me, to be quite honest. I mean, I've been blessed not only to be able to work in this kind of a educational ministry, but to be able to raise, you know, almost all of my children, almost all the way through.
Yeah.
That's been a great, great blessing. The curriculum, you know, you're talking about curriculum. Every book is always written from a worldview. And so it becomes very important that if we are using secular textbooks, that we kind of understand the worldview that textbook is actually yeah. being taught from, if we're going to use that kind of a textbook.
Oh, my kids immediately, if we read something, we read a science textbook, say there's an article on the Grand Canyon, and it talks about millions of years, they'll jump up, "Daddy, this book lies."
Sure. Well, that's good. It's good that they're beginning, you're giving them good discernment skills early on, and that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, you know, we use primarily Christian texts. We use Abeka. We use Bob Jones. We use some other things, like I mentioned, Understanding the Times.
Yeah.
Summit Ministries, we use some other things as well. But we do that predominantly because there's so much that we're teaching. And we want our teachers to be able to come in, and especially the younger teachers, if we have them, we want them to be able to have a guide in their textbooks by which to teach from. And we want to make sure that, you know, when our teachers do have that opportunity, they can actually bring in biblical integration in addition to what is already being presented in the textbook. So,
yeah,
I love what we're able to do. It's really kind of a unique thing. And I think our perspective is unique in the sense that we are able to really bring in other areas in the Word of God as well, whether it's through a chapel series or Bible classes,
mm-hmm.
You know, even in our athletics and in our arts and in our music, very conservative, as you mentioned earlier, but we're really trying to present something for the kids that really helps them think from that vantage point. So I coach girls varsity basketball. I have five girls. I don't know why I'm doing this, but I do. But, you know, I mean, the life lessons I am able to teach to our girls in our school, just in the setting of basketball, of all things, is phenomenal. The problems we come up with, relationships or issues that, you know, happen in games or performance or preparation, to be able to bring that home to a biblical emphasis and using the Bible, stories, verses, ideas, principles that are taught, where I can actually help the girls understand why are we doing what we're doing, what should we be doing that we're not doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is so wonderful to be able to do that in an educational system like ours. And, you know, if those things are taken away, I don't know what the alternatives are going to be. I think what we're going to see happen, if I can look into, you know, you were saying, where is education going? I think what we're going to see happen is I think we're going to see accreditation attacked first. And I think the discrimination issue is going to become a real big issue in education, because I think what accreditation organizations are going to say is they're going to say, hey, if you're going to be accredited, you have to do this and this and this, whether it's hiring policy or admissions policy.
Well, isn't that kind of already happening at the university level with, you know, looking at like North Carolina and the NCAA?
Sure.
You know, where...
Well, it's happening in our state association. I mean, the MSHSL, I mean, they came up with those policies in the last 2 years that dealt with transgender issues in locker room usage and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the schools that were competing in the MSHSL, for the listener who doesn't know, is the Minnesota State High School League. It would be all the sports league that a lot of private schools and, of course, public are involved in.
Sure.
We actually have decided to take a position not to be involved in it, because we don't want to have to mess with what is going to come down the pike. I was talking to an administrator of one of our rival schools, and we're friendly. It's funny how a lot of the administrators will call each other, hey, what are you going to do about this? What are you going to do about that? What do you think about this? And so there's a networking going on all the time. And one of the administrators had called me and said, you know, we're not sure what we're going to do, but we think this is going to be our policy. And their policy was they were going to forfeit a game. So if they played, let's say they got into a playoff situation and they played a public school that had a transgender, and generally it's going to be a guy who would be playing at a girls' sport.
Yeah.
They would say, we'll just forfeit the game. And I, I stopped for a minute and I said, okay, I'm hearing what you're saying, but let me create a scenario for you because basketball is my little coaching world.
Yeah.
So you finally get the team of the century, the team of the decade. Your coach has worked for years and years and years, and your fans have gone to game after game of losses. But this year you've got the team of teams, and the girls are, you know, 20 wins and 2 losses, and you're getting into the, you know, the sectional playoffs, and you're going to play such and such a school, and you beat them by 10, and there's all kinds of excitement in the school. Parents, you know, alumni, oh, man, you know, it's news. You know, everybody's going crazy, and you get to the semifinal game, and guess who you play? You got a school that has, you know, a transgender issue. Are you telling me you're going to forfeit that game? I mean, come on.
Yeah,
you know, where are we actually? Are we going to put ourselves as Christians in that kind of a situation, where it's a lose publicly, it's a lose within our families? You got fighting all of a sudden going on. I'm not saying you shouldn't forfeit the game. I am right. Saying you should.
You got to plan ahead.
But what I'm saying is that you're creating for yourself a scenario that is impossible.
Right.
And the administrator just said to me, "I hope and pray that day never comes." Well, that's not the way.
You gotta be ready for that.
Well, that's not the way I'm gonna operate my school.
Right.
As long as I am here, and you know, I just can't live that way. I'd rather take a position that's unpopular,
right,
and have my parents whine about it initially, and say, no, you know, we're not gonna go there. We're gonna compete independently. We're gonna compete in a league where we can play other schools that take similar position that we have. And you know,
well, that's probably the best way.
It is the best way.
Short term.
Yep.
I mean, I think that's why I think this whole North Carolina issue is like, in North Carolina, basketball is big. They say basketball and barbecue. Everybody, that's the culture of North Carolina. So they pass a law saying that in government buildings, you got a Y chromosome, you're using the male bath, right? This is government buildings.
Right.
I mean, they've said private sector, you set your own policy. You got a Target store wants to do the Target store thing, you know,
yeah.
That doesn't get talked about. So the NCAA decides they're going to be the arbiters of morality,
mm-hmm.
and they're just going to shut down basketball in North Carolina because they know that's going to hurt.
To prove their point. Yeah.
Right. And they've got Hollywood behind them, and they've got the popular culture is firmly behind him. It's probably easier right now to say, look, this is our position, and the league doesn't necessarily share our position, so maybe it's better to start a league that does share our position.
Yeah. Well, and that's what we've tried to do, and it may not be as competitive. You know, that's been a big criticism I've received, is that, well, we're not able to play such and such a school or such and such a school because the MSHSL.
But the kids are already going to this school because they want to get out of that environment.
Well, yes and no. Yes and no. Parents always want the competitive edge. I think they all think that their child is going to be the NBA star or the WNBA. You know, I kind of laugh at that. I was going back and we were talking amongst ourselves when we had a meeting and we said, how many kids have played at, you know, the highest level of university, you know, like, you know, at a North Carolina or an ASU or, you know, that kind of a caliber school. And we could only remember 2 in
the 51 years.
Yeah. Well, in 25 years, maybe, you know, last 25 years. I mean, and those kids were just unbelievable, exceptional specimens and athletes. And, mm-hmm. you know, their ability was so far ahead of all the other kids. It wasn't funny. But you know, that's, you're right. That's not why we're there. I mean, we're there to offer activities. We want to teach sportsmanship. We want to teach godliness, godly responses, how to win, how to lose. We want to teach preparation and how to be the very best you can be, even if you're not quite that talented. You know, there's so much that we're trying to teach that isn't all about win-win, lose-lose. For most of our kids, there's not the 4-year athletic scholarship. There is the opportunity to play maybe at a small Christian college. It's an opportunity to maybe play at a D3 school. But there's beyond that, it's rare in our league. Mm. And so, you know, we're not there for that purpose. We're there to train our kids to be godly. We're there to prepare them academically, and we offer the fine arts. We offer the athletics. Is it not quite at the caliber that my public school was? You know, we both share a similar testimony. Sure. I got saved at 24. I went to a big public high school in Phoenix. I played basketball and baseball at the big level. But you know what? I look back, and there's a lot of our kids that could have played at that level too. It's just they're not there. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to our school, and they're playing at a lesser level. But I'll tell you what, our kids are better rounded, well-rounded than most kids in the bigger schools because they can do everything. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not competing against unbelievable talent. So kids come out for, the girls come out for varsity basketball. I hope I have 10 kids this year. And even if I have a couple kids that have never played before, I'll work with them. And they may slow us down a little bit initially, but down the road, they'll catch up. And you know what? They'll be contributors, even though they're not great basketball players. You know, it's okay. I mean, this is not what we're about. And you know, you come to our games, and they're pretty intense. And we have a lot of fun. And, you know, I'm on my girls to perform when they get out there. And, you know, the fans are going crazy, and the kids' section's jumping up and down. And it's a lot of fun. But the whole premise of what we're doing, the priority is not the athletics necessarily. Right. It's still godliness. And I have to remember that when I get caught up in the competitiveness of the games and stuff. You know, why are we really there? And it comes back all the way back to what we talked about at the beginning. I want my kids to think like God thinks. I want them to have the right perspective when they're playing their instrument, playing basketball, in the classroom, or at work. Mm-hmm. I want them to have the right perspective, God's perspective. And if I don't accomplish that in what I am doing here at this school, might as well shut the doors. It's a wasted effort. It really is. And I, you know, we are working hard because that's what education should be.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be about trying to pick and choose and decide what is moral. No, there already is morality. There already is a solid foundation. It's based upon the person of Jesus Christ and the Word of God. And if that isn't what we're going to teach our kids, boy, what do we have left? Well, we know what we got left. We got a culture and a society that is just literally falling apart. We've got teen pregnancy. We've got suicides. We've got kids trying to figure out how to get high all over the place using whatever is over the counter. We got kids holding their breath and dying. I mean, are you serious? What are we doing? You know, and we can't figure it out as a culture. And I was shocked at a billboard I saw. One of our local candidates put up a billboard that said, and had the picture of the person, and it said, for marriage. And then it had another picture of the other candidate that says, anti-gay marriage. And I look at that, and I marvel. And I have to ask myself the question, are we really here as a culture? Are people driving by this and looking at this and buying what that says? I mean, it's just a simple message. Marriage is for everybody, whoever, whatever you want to define it as. But this guy's anti-gay marriage, so you can't vote for him. I'm looking at that, and I'm just shaking my head. Have we really degenerated that much in our morality? And I'm afraid that the answer is yes. I guess we'll find out in the election. But, you know, I mean, this is a product of our education.
Do you remember which... Without necessarily naming names, do you remember which district that was?
It was District 3.
District 3, okay.
Yeah. You'll have to drive. It's Highway 169 heading north on the west side of the highway.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I haven't been driving that much in the last 6 weeks or so. But yeah, I fortunately think that the guy who's anti-gay marriage is the incumbent, and I think he's safe. I'll say that much.
I think you're right. Yes.
So, fortunately.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's an interesting tactic. And then, but unfortunately, I can't predict that that's going to be the case in 2 years or 4 years or 6 years.
Right. Well, and you know, I mean, the truth is probably it won't be. But you know that. But again, what happens if a school like Fourth Baptist Christian School isn't there, and that option of education is eliminated entirely? What happens then? Well, you know, all that's left, if it is left, is homeschooling. That's all that might be left. And then,
well, even that's already under attack.
Sure. Well, at least there are more. There actually are more legal protections in Minnesota for homeschoolers than there are for private schools. It's kind of interesting. In fact, you can Google it if you want to look up Minnesota private school law or Minnesota homeschool law. You'll actually find a pretty interesting, probably about a 10-page document. It lists everything. And, you know, I like what Minnesota has
done. Well, I see, like, not to cut you off, but, you know, the program we're in is it's considered a charter school. So it's a government school.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so clearly, I mean, it's the way the school operates has changed over the 4 or 5 years that we've been using it. But it is so clearly an attempt by the state of Minnesota. And this, the curriculum is used nationwide. To claw back some of that homeschool.
Sure.
So it's an attempt to say, you know, we'll give you the curriculum for free if you use us. And that's really what drew us was, hey, I mean, I want to homeschool, but for me to sit down and go through books and decide on a curriculum, I just don't have. I need the structure. I need something there. And in fact, my wife suggested it, and I said, I was kind of scared of it being a government school, that it's going to be values not aligned with ours, and I'm going to have a hard time with it. And I said, I will do it on the condition that I can pull us out of that school at any time for any reason. Mm-hmm. And she said, okay, I'll agree to that. Any time for any reason, and that never expires. So, you know, we still have two kids in there. It's still in effect today. If I decide tomorrow this is wrong, I'm not going to teach my kids this way anymore. Pulling them out.
Well, and just so you know, I mean, I'm sure you know this, a lot of the Christian curriculum textbooks are available. Rebecca has a homeschool, BJ has a homeschool. You can go to Alpha Omega. I mean, they actually have an online school. I'm sure there are plenty of other ones too. There's a lot out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're never limited. The listener, people who are listening in are never limited to their curriculum choices. You know, there's so many.
As I thought we would, we've eaten up. Well, we've gone over an hour. We've eaten up an hour pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I want to do before we close is I'd like to talk a little bit. I mean, we've been talking about kind of your area of expertise, which is local here in Minnesota. But Christian education is worldwide. We've got a worldwide audience. There are people that listen to Echo Zoe from Europe and South Africa and Asia. And I hear from people all over the world. And I apologize. I don't know what to... I don't know what I have for our brothers and sisters in those other countries. Some of them are in really tough places.
Yeah.
You know, I think about the family just a few years ago that came over from Germany looking for asylum because they wanted to homeschool their kids. And our government said, no, we are not going to give you asylum. And they were going to go to jail if they didn't put their kids in the government schools in Germany.
Yeah.
But, you know, what do we at least have to offer for the American audience that, as far as people that are looking, you know, the demographics are pretty varied. I know I've got good friends that are listeners that are young, that are my age or even younger, have young kids. I've got older people whose kids have grown and gone. What can people do to support Christian education, whether or not your kids are grade school age or high school age or preschool age or grown and gone?
Sure, sure. Well, again, you're going to support what you are convicted of and what you believe in. I mean, generally, support has to come by having conservative people in elected positions. We need to have a conservative House of Representatives. You know, it'd be great to have a good president, you know.
I don't think that's going to happen either way.
Well, I know, but you know what I'm saying. It would be great to have a Senate that would become conservative. It would be great to have a Supreme Court that was conservative. I mean, these are the things for the, you know, for our future of our kids and our grandkids. I'm scared to death of the future for them. I mean, for my lifetime, and, you know, we'll raise our kids, you know, as we have been raising our kids, but it's their children, it's our grandkids, it's our great grandkids. What are they going to have? And I think the issue is we have to become more involved in government. We've got to become involved in electing certain people in. We've got to become more vocal we can't be Christians who are locking themselves up and trusting that, you know, God's will is going to be done and everything's going to be fine. Well, you know what? We live in America. We have a representative form of government. I mean, we can help put people in office and take them out. We need to become involved. We need to become a voice. You know, my voice is not always real popular. I've received a lot of real hate emails, and I'm on a few websites that aren't too good because people hate me. I don't care. You know, I'm going to keep standing for what I believe. I believe that Christianity served a vital purpose in the development of the history of our nation and of our educational system, and we got to keep fighting for that. And that's probably the primary thing. If you're asking what is it that people can get involved in, wherever you live in the United States, you can't be in the closet. You got to get out and you got to start standing for what is right, and you got to start having a voice. You can go to committee meetings. You can sit in your state house committee meetings. You can sit in your state senate committee meetings. You can testify. You can just listen, and then you can talk to one of the senators or representatives that are on that committee afterwards and tell them what you think. I mean, these are simple things. I go to D.C. Every September. I can walk in. I don't know if people understand this, but our government is set up that if you go into the offices of the House of Representatives, and there's three big buildings, you can go to your congressman's office. You can open up the door, you can walk in, and you can say, hey, I'm a citizen of Minnesota, and this congressman is my congressman. I would like to set up an appointment to talk with him. At the very least, you probably talk to an aide. But you can have that aide's ear in Washington, D.C. if you're there, and you can tell them what you want. You can tell them what you think. Mm-hmm. You can send emails. You can make phone calls. These are things that I do that I don't like doing. Mm-hmm. I waste a lot of time, honestly. And a lot of times I think it's a waste of time.
Well, it's really sad that we would have to go to Washington.
Well, but you can do it from here. I mean, right. You know, you can write the letters. You can make the phone calls. But what I'm trying to say is, you know, I'm having to do that a lot.
Yeah.
And it's a waste of a valuable resource of time because no one else will do it. Mm-hmm. And if more people would get involved, I wouldn't have to do it as much. I would do it less. But, I mean, honestly, we have had to be at hearings in Minnesota to try to get exemptions on certain bills. We've had to try to convince legislators who don't read the bills to read sections of the bills so they actually know what's there. I mean, it's fascinating what is going on in our government, and if we're not willing to get active, it's all going to change rapidly. So that, and I think the other big thing is we just got to pray. You know, we got to be people of prayer. We got to make it a priority and find out who your legislator is, find out who your senator is in your state, and, you know, maybe make a phone call. I have a relationship with a couple of our people. When they're here from D.C., I'll call them up and say, hey, can you have lunch with me? And because of my position as the director of the, you know, they're like, oh, sure, you know. And so the aide and the congressman will show up and we'll have lunch together. And they'll ask me, what do you want? And I'll say, I don't want anything. I just want you to leave us alone. I don't want you to create any laws. I don't want you to allow any laws to get passed. I just want you to allow us to have the freedom to operate as we have for all of American history. But I do want something from you. I want to be able to pray for you. So how do I pray for you? And I start to develop relationships with people, and that has gone so far as just getting to know certain ones, because nobody likes these guys. They're always grabbing their ear, and they're always telling them what they want and what they should do. I don't do that. My approach is totally different. It's like, hey, how can I get to know you? How can I pray for you? I call one of our congressman periodically, or email him or see him, and I will just say, hey, I'm praying for you. How do I pray for you now? What's going on in your life? You know, I'm not going to let anybody know what's happening. Just tell me. Let me pray for you. And he is so grateful for that. And so, you know, these are things that, you know, we can do as citizens, or just tell them, hey, I'm praying for you on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Thank you for your service. I appreciate it. Even some of our liberal ones, I've developed some relationships with some of their aides because it's hard to see them.
Yeah.
And when I was in D.C. last, I visited one of the more liberal congressmen in the House and met with the legislative aide, and I was surprised at how welcoming he was to us. And I just said, hey, you know, I want you to
I'm
praying for you guys.
I was talking earlier about my kind of being drawn to Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And Twitter's done a lot for me, not only through through this ministry and this podcast and stuff, but I've gone through phases of being more politically active locally, and developed relationships there too. And so, you know, I've got connections to some state people.
Yep.
I got to know my state rep where I used to live. I've still got the current guy, the new guy, I guess, my new home, isn't really on Twitter much. So it helps when they're engaged. But yeah, I'm glad you went there with the liberals, because they can be scary at times. You know, they believe completely diabolically opposed views that we have. I mean, they can be 180 on everything.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean they bite. And, sure. You know, I developed that relationship with my former state rep. And he votes for a lot of things that, I mean, I really don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows I would never vote for him. But he's a nice guy. And he'd knock on my door if he's in the neighborhood. He just lived, you know, 8 or 10 blocks east of me. And if he was out on a walk and whatever, he's been known to knock on my door and say hi and see how I'm doing. And we tweet back and forth. We still tweet back and forth, even though I'm not in his district anymore.
Yeah.
Their ears are open. I mean, that's the politician's mind.
Well, and you know, you want to keep those communication avenues open, because there may be a time when you really, really need their help.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to be able to approach them and say, hey, I really need you to go to bed on this issue. This is and a lot of times they'll listen, and they've never thought about it. They're trying to accomplish an agenda, but they don't think of it as terms of perhaps a right of an individual or a group of individuals, and they don't realize how many people something is really going to affect. And that's how votes do get changed. But if we're not, like I said, if we're not willing.
Well, and the good ones, I mean, the ones that are effective at their job,
mm-hmm.
understand that they're, I mean, especially at the state level, there are a lot of nonpartisan issues that come along, mm-hmm. that where they're working with people at city councils and whatnot. And they'll be working with people who are on the opposite side of the political spectrum. So they're used to developing those relationships,
yeah.
and hearing people, and at least I might not agree with you, but I can at least understand why you disagree with me.
Yeah. Well, I use the name Senator Limmer, who is our state senator in this particular district where you live now.
Uh-huh.
Man, the guy is very conservative, but he is very careful about when he speaks and how he speaks. Very wise, an older gentleman. And I've seen him in action at committee meetings when it was everybody against him, and he was the only voice. And he waited. He probably was praying fervently through the meeting, and then he spoke, and everybody's mind changed. And
wow.
He's a fascinating guy.
Sounds like Mr. Smith
great
who
guy.
Went to Washington.
Yeah, well, and people didn't listen to him. But, you know, this guy is wise.
I'm sorry, I'm thinking of 12 Angry Men.
Yeah.
the one juror who...
Oh, yes. But this guy is one of those guys where he's just very careful, very cautious, and a good man. But,
yeah.
You know, I do think that, you know, a word spoken in carefully and cautiously and tactfully and godly oftentimes will touch the hearts and change the minds of people.
Well, that's important. You know, I've developed that relationship with that liberal
mm-hmm.
rep because I extend him the same respect that he extends to me, and I try to extend more respect. You know, he knows where I stand.
Yep.
But, you know, shake his hand and treat him like a human being, because yep. he's made in God's image, just like everybody else.
And you know what? You may catch him at a time when he is hurting, and he needs to hear the gospel, and he might just even pray with you. I mean, that we've got to.
Well, I've gotten tracks into his hand.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just.
Yep, and I have too, you know, in various ones, you're exactly right, is we've got to, we're supposed to be salt and light, but we're afraid. We're afraid of all these conversations, and we shouldn't be. You know, we just got to be ourselves, and we got to look for opportunities, and as we are going, we need to ask the Lord to give us the right words, the right opportunity to share, and you know what? God does that. I mean, so many times he's brought things to me, and I never even anticipated, but I was ready. I wanted to be used in that way. And, you know, I feel like I have a pretty good platform with most people that I can actually, you know, talk about the political positions that we might have that may be totally opposed to their position, but they will at least listen. And that's where we have to be as Christians. We've got to get involved. And that becomes so critical. But it's hard to
When you get them the gospel, that's the heart of it all right mm-hmm. there. I mean, yeah. we can win elections. And then we'll have setbacks. And, I mean, there are ebbs and flows in politics. Yep. But the one way we're going to get ahead in that realm is through the gospel.
Yep.
And I don't think we should ever be sharing the gospel in order to win politically. We don't want to make more Republicans.
Right.
We don't want to get people to Jesus because Christians vote Republican. But if somebody is truly saved and truly belongs to Christ, and is truly regenerated and renewed, their worldview will completely change,
mm-hmm.
and that'll affect how they vote.
Yep. Well, and it'll affect how their views are changed too. You know, we don't stop praying for our president simply because it appears that he'll never take a conservative position on anything. We continue to pray for salvation, that someone
Absolutely.
Is going to have an avenue to be able to explain how he can know Christ in a personal way and, mm-hmm. and understand the gospel. And so, you know, we do that with our kids every day. You know, we're constantly praying for our leaders, and we do that in our school every day. It's one of the blessings of having a Christian school mm-hmm. is you can pray about anything and everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, we want our kids to understand that God is working, and they've got to be active in having a part in all of that, so.
Well, Alan, you know, I generally shoot for an hour, and we've gone over. I'm at my little counter here says an hour and 18 minutes, so we've gone well over an hour. But I thank you so much for your time, and thanks for bringing the books in. I mean, even though we didn't sit and read much, I mean, it's just really fun to see where we used to be.
Yeah,
to see to look through a table of contents in a school book, a public school book. And see Bible stories woven throughout that. That's really
that
cool.
Neat? Yep.
And while I pray that while I don't see it happening, I pray that maybe we can through the gospel get our country back to that point again.
Well, very good. Well, thanks for having me.
Echo Zoe Radio is an outreach of Echo Zoe Ministries. If you are blessed by the show, please consider offering your support. There are many things you can do to help, including prayer, sharing the show with others, and your financial support. Echo Zoe Ministries is a registered nonprofit organization with 501c3 tax-exempt status, and your donations are tax-deductible. For more information about how you can support Echo Zoe Ministries, please visit echozoe.com/support.
Well, that wraps up episode 103. Thanks for listening to Echo Zoe Radio. For show notes, visit echozoe.com/103. Be sure to check out the website for links to connect to Echo Zoe on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+, and love to connect with you. So follow, like, or circle Echo Zoe Ministries. Lord willing, I'll be back next month for the December 2016 episode of Echo Zoe Radio.